been a long day. Grab a beer and sit back. It's time for Brew Talk. Here's Scott, Chad, and the Brew Doctor himself, Dr. Michael Mosier.
Happy Brews Day, everybody. It's another, well, I won't say lovely Tuesday evening.
It's a beautiful Colorado spring day.
It is. You gotta love that Colorado spring weather. 70s are coming here in a couple days, so just hang on there. We get through this snow and cold and, well, some nice warm
weather. Well, but, you know, it sometimes does snow this late. And
it does.
And I'm expecting one more big snow to come.
Yeah. Well, that's the way the season's kind of been. I mean,
it's kind of good, too, because, you know, I'm still not quite over my dark beer phase.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so still need another couple weeks before I transition into those spring beers.
Well, that kind of played into the beer I selected for the review beer today, too.
Oh, I'm excited.
This is kind of one of those transition beers for me, anyway. Mm-hmm. So we'll get to that a little bit later. First, we've got our table beer from Rule 105.
Yeah, so I brought in our Taddy Boggler Scottish Ale today as our table beer. It's very malt forward, kind of smooth drinking, and a pretty decent beer to consume. And it's a little darker, so a little bit more malty.
Yeah, I like that malty.
Yeah, well, me too. Right now I do, for sure. Yeah.
Great for a day like this, for sure.
Very much so.
For that half inch of snow we were supposed to get?
Yeah, half inch. Well, luckily the roads and everything was warm, so it's a melting faster than it can stay.
That's right. You know, that's the nice part about it being warm over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think it ever really stuck to the roads.
No, not really.
That I noticed, anyway.
And didn't you enjoy that weekend, though? Wow.
Oh, man, wasn't it nice?
That was a perfect day to drink a beer out on a patio, right?
Absolutely. And we've got many more of those coming, I feel.
I know.
My favorite type of year is when those patios start opening up and you sit out in the sun. And
so do you like spring more or do you like fall more?
I tend to like spring more because you don't have those chances of the 100-plus degree days like you do sometimes in the fall.
Right.
And I enjoy the cold much more than I do the heat. Mm. For me, it's much easier to get warm than it is to cool off.
Oh. See, and I kind of like the fall because I love the smell of the leaves that have fallen off the ground.
True.
And a little crisp in the air that you've been sweating all summer long, and now finally it's cool enough that you're trying to decide whether shorts are the appropriate attire or should you have worn pants or something, those kinds of things. So that's my favorite time of the year.
Well, and theme for me, springtime, sometimes in those mornings when you've got that frost and things are just starting to bloom and just starting, the grass is just starting to green and the trees are budding, and there's a certain aroma to that, too, that I enjoy.
Right. Well, because we've been cooped up in the house for how many months, and now finally we
can get
fresh air.
So now you're getting out and get that fresh air instead of the recirculated heat.
Yes. I know exactly what you're saying.
Ah, springtime.
I know.
Anyway, so we got a few things we're going to talk about today. One of the things I noted, came across this morning was Tesla is coming out with, or has come out with, a beer. It's a German-style Pilsner brewed by a brewery in Berlin, I believe. And for three bottles, and the bottles are specially shaped. Apparently, they look like the trunk of the car or something.
Okay.
I don't have a Tesla. I don't know much about Tesla cars, so I can't speak to whether or not the bottle actually looks like the trunk.
They're a little outside my price range.
Yes, but for three bottles of this German Pilsner, goes for 89 euros, which is just about $100.
Mm-hmm.
Which got me thinking, there are a lot of gimmicks in beer marketing. I feel like this is one of them. You know, Tesla throws its name behind the beer, and you know, whether or not people actually, it's a good beer or not, I think people go out and buy this beer just to say, hey, I've got the Tesla beer. It's more like a status beer, maybe.
It could be. The bottle itself could be a very expensive bottle. Mm-hmm. And the beer itself could be like the most amazing beer in the world that it might make it worth $30 a bottle.
Yeah.
But, that would be the definite gimmick in my book. I've seen quite a few gimmicks. But in some cases, so gimmick is too harsh a word.
Yeah, I agree.
Marketing.
But I was trying to come up with a better word.
Yeah.
I couldn't.
Well,
marketing, mate. Yeah,
good marketing plan. Because I know that there have been some breweries around that have had like the specialty beer of the month kind of thing, where they are specifically designing recipes and things like that go over the top, not just a standard kind of Pilsner ale or something, some kind of over-the-top beer. And they'll bottle it in a special bottle, maybe put it in a wooden case, that kind of stuff.
Right.
Have a couple glasses that go along with it. And then the price for the two glasses and this bottle of really special beer
kind
could
of like
be very expensive.
Sam Adams does is it Utopia?
Yeah, like Utopia itself. And that's because that Utopia beer it's quite pricey just for them to manufacture.
Right.
So, I can see in some cases like that where it's a marketing idea, and I can see in other cases where it's a gimmick. A good example of for me that's a gimmick is the Doppelbach. There's a Doppelbach from Germany that comes with a little tree ornament hanging on it that's a goat. And so every bottle has a little string tied to it with a little white goat on it. And to me, that's a gimmick thing.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't eat the goat. You can't like put it in your beer and it dissolves or something. You know, it doesn't do anything like
that.
You
just kind of collect it to say, hey.
Yeah.
So I've had this beer.
Here's my box full of goats that I've collected over the years.
Would the Tesla beer be a gimmick or not a gimmick if they specially designed the bottle to be aerodynamic enough so it would give you the perfect amount of head? Make it a gimmick, or would that just make it
better?
See,
that's what I'm saying. Like there was a brewing company that came up with a glass where they laser etched the bottom of the glass so that it always had bubbles coming out of the center of the glass. Is that a gimmick, or is that extra engineering that makes it, ramped
just,
up a notch?
Again, a good marketing thing.
Right.
I think Left Hand Brewing did that. They came out with a different shaped glass for their milk stout when they started bottling it.
Correct.
To where you poured it a certain way in this glass, and it gave the perfect head on the top of the beer, like you were talking about, Micah, with the bottle of Tesla. So
when you said shaped like the trunk, the first thing I thought was, why isn't it shaped like the rocket?
Yeah, that's a good question.
SpaceX rocket. Like, I would have thought that they would try to do something cool and sciencey, not like something artistic and, like you said, gimmicky.
Yeah. Well, and I did notice that this beer is only available in Europe. So it's in Germany, it's in the UK, some of the northern, Sweden, Norway.
Maybe you can find it on Amazon or
I'm
eBay.
Sure you could probably. I'm sure eBay.
It would be worth kind of. Now they're getting me sold on it, right?
Right. So now you're interested.
I'm interested. Right? I kind of want to see what it looks like. You know, maybe get together with a couple friends and we each buy one and split it. So I'm thinking it may be worth looking into. Oh, darn. I got hooked.
You got hooked. And I think it's a great marketing marketing campaign. We see it every spring with Russian River Brewing Company.
Oh, yes.
We just had Pliny the Younger come out, which every year is a huge to-do. They brew a very limited quantity. They market the heck out of it. They only gets to go to certain bars and liquor stores other than the brewery itself. Mm-hmm. And people line up outside the brewery waiting to get
days.
This beer.
They camp in line for multiple days just to make sure they get a taste of it.
Again, a great marketing campaign. They built this whole campaign around this one beer that comes out once a year.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe the word we're looking for then is building the hype. You know, the Tesla is helping this German brewing company build the hype on their Pilsner. And so they're going to do it with these specialty bottles and really help out the whole thing.
Yeah, that's true.
That's true. Maybe that's something we could do. I'll make a very, very small limited release of something and market the heck out
of
it.
We need to, we'll start building the hype. So
Dehydrated water.
There you go.
It comes in little packets. Just add water, and there you go.
I like it. We'll start hyping it up.
There you go. And then everybody will have to have one, like a pet rock.
Available only on this day.
There you go.
And we'll see the line, people lining out.
Yeah, line forms here.
That's right.
Serving from noon till 5.
Then you can start selling like camping spots.
Ooh, yeah.
To where people will say, oh.
Ooh, they want an electric hookup?
Yeah.
There you go.
We got it. I think we got a good start to a good marketing thing here.
This sounds great. I think it would work for any kind of industry, too. Like there's a special pie that you make, and everybody has – there's only one pie.
There you go.
And everybody wants to line up and make sure they get a slice.
There's actually a couple restaurants that are that kind of do that. So there's – I can't remember if it's New York or Chicago, but there's a not real fine dining, but like a casual fine dining place that one day a week for 2 hours late night on a Saturday, they do cheeseburgers.
Interesting.
And apparently they're very good cheeseburgers, but people line up hours ahead of time waiting to get the, and when the burgers are gone, they're gone.
Oh.
So it's selected for these 2 hours, but if they run out before those 2 hours, they're just done.
There was a place like that in Philadelphia at the Reading Terminal Market that served roast beef sandwiches and things like that. And they only made so many roasts each day.
Yeah.
They opened up at like 9 o'clock in the morning, and by, you know, 1 o'clock, they were sold out.
Yeah.
So there was always a line. You would stand in line waiting for the person in front of you to finish their sandwich so you could take their chair.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. So, yeah, good hype.
So I think, you know, this doesn't just work with anything. It's actually, there's got to be good food and good beers. And there's got to be some kind of value to get the people to line up and enjoy this.
Right. If you were doing this when making like liver and onions, I think you'd struggle to get
line out the door. You know, the 70 plus age group doesn't really line up outside, because those are about the only people that I know that still eat the liver and onions. All right. Well, you know, let's take a break here. When we come back, Doc's got a list.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk about the top 5
beer companies
in the world.
In the world.
Stick around and find out what those beer companies are. I think they'll surprise you. Welcome back to Brew Talk from the Aloe Fiber Studios here in blustery downtown Greeley, Colorado. The snow has stopped, but the winds continue to blow. During the break, we got a message from Scott, who is out on assignment. He's not a liver and onions fan, which
doesn't surprise me. Yeah, it doesn't surprise most people.
But you said you and Christy are liver
and onions
fans. Oh,
yeah, we're big liver and onions fans. Anytime I have the opportunity to get liver, I will buy it. Like if you buy a quarter of a cow or half a cow, you know, nobody else wants the liver, so
that's right.
I'll take it.
See, we were lucky enough. My dad didn't like it, so we never had to endure it as kids, except maybe once in a while at the grandparents' house. And And it was always kind of overcooked in shoe leather and it just stunk up the house.
I was going to say, you got to cook it right. You have to have the right condiment. My wife really, really, really loves tons of onions on it.
Yeah.
For me, it's got to be smothered in ketchup.
Yeah.
Which is like the weirdest thing in the world. But so I eat my liver and onions with tons of ketchup. Probably like a half a bottle of ketchup. I don't know if it's because I like the liver or if I just like ketchup.
Yeah. What kind of beer do we pair with liver and onions?
Liver and onions. I would pair something probably a little lighter and crisp to kind of clean your palate in between bites. So I would say maybe like a Pilsner or a...
Oh, yeah. Good choice.
Maybe a Helles or something like that.
Yeah.
Just something that's really crisp and just sort of like washes everything away. And then you're ready to go
for the next bite.
Yep.
So you found a list.
Mm-hmm, I did.
You've got the top five beer companies, not breweries, but beer companies.
Beer companies in the world. In the world.
And I have a feeling these are probably going to surprise us.
That's correct. Some of them may surprise you. And after you think about it for a little bit, you'll be like, oh, okay, yeah, I understand.
Yeah, it makes sense.
It goes all the way down. The list that they had went all the way down to number 20,
okay,
which started to include a lot more of the craft brewing world. Mm-hmm. But in the top five, there's those big conglomerate companies you might think of. Should we take guesses as to what they are, or should I just read you the top five?
Let's just – well, I don't know.
Go for it?
Yeah, let's just go for it.
Okay. So number five is –
I'm sure my guesses would all be wrong. That's so.
Number five is Kirin.
Kirin, yeah.
It's a Japanese company that makes Kirin, as well as doing a whole bunch of other things. They also happen to have a a pharmaceutical branch in their holdings, which I'm sure helps increase their holdings and making them move up a little bit in the market.
I've had Kirin beer.
It's
actually very good.
Yeah, it is really good. The next one up is Asahi.
Asahi. Another Japanese.
Another Japanese company. They made $19.22 billion in fiscal year 22.
Wow.
And, of course, you've heard of Asahi, right? They have holdings in Australia and New Zealand.
Are they the ones that... their company bought part of New Belgium?
I believe that's true. I'd have to double check on that to be.
I know it was a Japanese company, and we'd have to double check that.
I think it is Asahi. Number three is Daigo.
Daigo?
Yeah.
I've not heard of that.
Their revenue is $20.6 billion
in
fiscal year 22. They have brands that also include things like Johnny Walker, J&B, Gordon's Gin, in addition to a lot of the other kinds of things you might be thinking about, Stout, Guinness, that kind of stuff.
Oh, okay.
So that's Daigo. Number two, I thought would be a little bit higher than this. This company... generated $37.6 billion. Heineken.
Heineken.
Dutch company founded in the mid-1800s. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we know what they make.
Yeah. And I believe they also have some holdings here in the States with some craft breweries.
They do. They do. Heineken does have craft breweries as well. And, of course, I don't think it's a surprise to anyone that Anheuser-Busch... AB InBev. Yep. Number one. Their revenue in fiscal year 22 was $57.8 billion.
Wow.
And, of course, AB InBev not only does Anheuser-Busch, but everything under the sun.
Right.
Right? You can just think of what they do. They've got a little bit everywhere.
Yeah. Again, another company that's gone and bought some craft breweries.
Right. Right. The one that I first recognized was the one that makes Sculpin, Ballast Point. This was like a long time ago, I was like, hey, this is a really great brewery. And then I found out that not too long after I first noted Ballast Point, they were purchased by AB InBev. So,
well, and right here in Colorado, Breckenridge,
that's
was
correct.
Was you know, that was a big deal when AB InBev came in and bought out Breckenridge. So,
right, and it's all good. It's all part of them trying to make sure they're hitting all parts of the market,
absolutely,
and not just focusing on one thing. If they only focused on like Bud Light Lime as the right. only product they made, that'd be very cyclical.
It'd be a much different company and much smaller.
Much smaller, and it would go up and down and up and down with flavors, with people's preferences. So here they have wide holdings so that they can maintain more of a steady stream of revenue across the board.
Yeah, and I think you see that with all the companies in that top five. They all have, you know, and some of them not just beer. And I know AB InBev has kind of starting to expand into distributing other, you know, not beer, but, you know, liquors.
Liquors and seltzers
and
things like that. Yeah. So all of them do that.
Yeah.
As you can see, even from Kirin that does some pharmaceutical sales. Asahi.
Yeah, that's an interesting one to me. Pharmaceuticals.
Yeah, I know, right? And like Asahi, which is branching out across everything. Diego, which is their big market is in Johnny Walker and J&B.
Yeah.
Those kinds of things, the harder liquors. And then you get the top two. Is back to what I would have thought would be there, things like Heineken and AB InBev.
Yeah.
But Miller Coors didn't make the top five.
Was Miller Coors on the list at all?
That I'll have to look, but I'm sure they are on the list. I just don't remember what number they were. I'll find it.
Because they've kind of done the same thing where they've come in. You know, it started with just Coors and Miller, and then they merged. And there's other brands that they've kind of collected over the years. I know Pabst, Blue Ribbon being one of them. And there are some craft breweries in there as well, Blue Moon, to name one here in Colorado.
Right.
So I think it just kind of goes to show that everybody's out there trying to,
Well, it's like when you have a portfolio of things that you're trying to do for retirement. Don't just invest in
eggs in one basket, right?
You diversify, and that's exactly what these companies are doing. They're diversifying. So that they can be out there too, and so that they're not in trouble one way or the other.
Right. Yeah.
So
when the markets take a swing, like you mentioned that you saw something that beer sales overall took a
little dive this last year. Not in 2022, 2021.
Right.
They took a little bit of a dip, and that could be because of a number of factors. One. 2021 was probably not the best year to be drinking beer, especially since everybody was sick, right? So that probably had a little bit to do with it. Then you also have people were kind of locked up in the house and didn't go out as much.
Didn't go out as much.
So overall beer sales went down just a little bit. And then, of course, the market shifts a little bit too. You see some increase in the spirits side of things, while you see a decrease in the beer side of things. And then you'll see that switch. So the market does
trends
fluctuate,
ebb and flow. And,
which is why you want to diversify if you're holding numbers of companies. Yeah. So, I'm still looking here, trying to find out where all of these make perfect sense, where they're located. Carlsberg is number 8. Molson Coors is number 7. Yeah.
So in the top 10.
In the top 10, which is not too bad.
No. Still a lot of money and a pretty large company.
Yeah, $10.7 billion for Molson.
That's crazy.
Molson Coors.
I can't even imagine.
I know, right? The one at the bottom of the list, just to see what it took in order to get on the list, was Bell's Brewery with $111 million.
Quite a
shift, right? So Stone with $630 million was number 19. So all you have to do to break into the top 20 is make over $111 million and you're in the top 20.
And you're good to go. So you got goals, Doc.
Rule 105 is really close to hitting that.
Yeah, there you go. Goals to set for the upcoming years. Let's go ahead and take a break here, and when we come back, we'll do our we'll talk about our review beer. That I feel like is a great style for springtime.
I agree.
We're still in that kind of cold weather. It's warming up a little bit, but so you get a little bit of both worlds. Stick around and find out what it is. Welcome back to the Aloe Fiber Studios. I'm Chad. He's Doc. This is Brew Talk.
And this is beer.
And this is beer. Mm. We've got a spring style beer that I brought in today. We've kind of talked about. I brought in Prost Brewing Company's Vienna Lager. So Vienna Lager, for those that don't know, is an Austrian style amber lager, a little maltier than your pilsners or your lighter lagers, mm-hmm. Which is why I think it makes for a great spring beer. You get some of that rich maltiness that you crave a lot during the winter.
Correct.
But it's still a little lighter in style.
And you're transitioning to something lighter.
You're transitioning to something lighter for those warmer spring patio days and mm-hmm. and getting ready for the summers. Rings in at 5.4% ABV, so not too heavy there. And let's see what Doc thinks.
Well, I just happened to look up a little bit more about the Vienna Lager because I know that this style was generated in Vienna or was first made in Vienna. And it's basically just a standard lager where they do a process called decoction. And that means to boil part of the mashing, the grain with the water, mm-hmm. And use that to help increase the temperature to get the sugars out.
Okay.
And whenever you boil sugar, it caramelizes and makes more caramely, malty kind of flavors, which you can definitely tell on this.
Yeah.
Now, in some cases, the production has been done to mimic that by adding specialty malts that have that
kind of
flavor in them. But traditionally, it would be just decocted. In the 1800s, there was a lot of immigrants out of Germany mm-hmm. and Austria, and many of them settled in Mexico. And so we see an awful lot of Mexican beer styles based on the Vienna Lager.
Vienna Lagers.
And in fact, one in particular, the Dos Equis Amber, mm-hmm. is a really good example of a Austrian Vienna Lager made in Mexico.
Made in Mexico. Mm-hmm. That's great. Yeah. So, and I always knew that a lot of Mexican beers were based on German styles.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it doesn't really click that, there are different styles that,
right.
that, you know, migrated over that way.
Right. And you think about it, too. If you think about the United States beers around the mid-1800s, the big style that got really accepted here was mm-hmm. the lager, which is a style that immigrants brought over with them from Germany
yeah.
and Austria.
Huge German influence, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So when the German peoples did an awful lot of immigration to North America, that's when we see them bring their styles with them. And in Mexico, there was more of the Vienna lager style. Mm-hmm. In the United States, it was more of a just a standard lager style. And yeah, so believe it or not, a lot of our beers are German-based.
German-based, mm-hmm. which is interesting.
So to this beer, I initially noticed the aroma
yeah.
is more spicy, earthy than you might anticipate it being.
To me, it's got that aroma as almost as when you walk into the brewery and it's a brew day,
mm-hmm.
you get that aroma, and it's almost like that, only, you know, toned down.
Muted.
Yeah. But it's that similar mm-hmm. aroma.
Yeah, and then the head on this particular beer, too, was just fascinating. It just wouldn't quit.
It wouldn't.
So really, really great foam if you like your foam on your beer.
And it's really light in amber color. Mm-hmm. So it's not...
Right.
It's
the color of the brown at the bottom of the can.
Yeah. So it's perfectly...
It's perfect choice of
So colors. If you look at the can, it's almost the tops... A white.
Oh my, I didn't even notice that.
And the bottom's the amber color, so it's the head of the beer and the the beer itself.
Wow, I wonder if that was by design.
I wonder.
That's pretty cool.
That is really cool.
So my first initial sips of it were, this beer is malt forward. There's a little bit of hop flavor, not a lot of hop aroma. Some hop aroma, that's the earthiness mm-hmm. that I'm smelling. And but not a lot of bitterness, which you don't really want in a beer like this.
Yeah. And it's not superly, overly malty.
Mm-mm.
Like you know.
Not like the Scottish ale
we've been drinking. Not like the Scottish ale we've been drinking. But it's just there that, you know it's there. And it adds to that.
And there's a nice dry finish on it that makes me thirsty.
Yeah.
Which is characteristic of, okay, now I need another sip.
There you go.
So I think this beer is one that after you get done with one, you're probably going to want a second one to wash down the dryness from the hops and the grains that's there. It's not overly sweet is what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good thing.
And I think that's a good quality as well. Yeah. I agree with you.
Overall, this is a really tasty beer.
Yeah. So far, I'm really enjoying every sip.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what else we can say about this beer.
It's brown.
It's brown. It's bubbly. It's tasty.
It does have, did you say it was 5.2%?
5.2%.
Yeah, which I think is a good standard.
Which is right in there, isn't it, for the style?
For the style, right in there. You don't want it much higher than that. Otherwise, the beer's not crushable.
Right. And again, like you said, great, you're sitting out maybe on the patio on a warmer spring day. You get that little bit of dryness that wants you to drink a few more sips and... Maybe you can go out and have a few and
you're outside and it's like this weekend was nice enough that if you didn't grill, you probably should have that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And this would have been a great beer to sit around the grill and watch the hamburgers and the hot dogs go.
There you go.
And this would have really helped out a lot, quench the thirst and keep you kind of grounded in the, hey, it's still winter-y.
Yeah.
So don't forget your malt.
Don't forget your malt.
And then, but it's getting warm and dry enough outside that you really want a beer that kind of goes along with that.
Right.
Kind of a nice dry finish, a little crisper, and getting ready to add some hops to our beer as we get into summer.
So from the Vienna Lager, what is your next step for in the
That is a good question.
Transition of beers?
Yeah, because once we get into the heat of summer, there's a couple different tacks to take. One is to go off and just go full force into IPAs because you want the hop aroma in your nose, you love the flavor of the hops, and you want that little bitter at the end that really just drives you to drinking a really good West Coast. For me, West Coast IPA.
Yeah, I'm right there with you.
East Coast would work there too, though, if you happen to be a favorite of yours. Well, the other tact, I think, would be to go to something that's more along the lines of a Pilsner, where we don't have the high hoppiness, but we just have a very crisp, clean, clear beer that's just there to refresh you.
Okay.
So I would be thinking of things like just a standard Pilsner. Oh, heck, I might even be thinking of something like a PBR.
Or going that route,
just to help quench thirst. So I don't want a lot of alcohol in there. I want to supplement my
with baseball starting a good baseball beer.
Baseball beer, yeah. And then of course, then there's the other where I'm just sweating to death. I need to generate some saliva. I need to keep my juices, for lack of a better word, flowing. So I'm going to go sour.
Ooh, sours.
And then throw in a couple sours in there to kind of keep things hydrated.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. In the springtime, you think berries, right. So there's a lot of good mm-hmm. sour options out there. So
after spring, after Vienna lagers, I'm thinking moving more towards one of those three different angles. And Hefeweizens
yes.
Are probably a more of a spring-type beer than a summer beer. They're a little heavier.
I agree, yeah.
Kristallweizen would be more of a summer beer than a spring beer.
And that's just a clear...
That's a filtered Hefeweizen. So the yeast has been removed, so the bready flavors are gone. The fullness that you might get is gone.
But do you still get those Hefeweizen characteristics?
You do. You get the clove and the banana, but you don't...
You don't get the yeasty, strong...
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, that sediment that you're supposed to swirl up and pour into your beer, yeah. That's gone. So you don't get, you don't really have like a, you're not, it's not like you're eating bread or something
right,
like that.
Right. Yeah.
And then as you move into the start of summer, it starts to get hot enough, then you're like, okay, now I'm going full force. I'm going to go for my IPA.
IPAs.
Like a Lagunitas or a Stone IPA.
Yeah.
I might venture off just to try like an ESB or something like that, a little bit more malty but hoppy. But then I'm back on going for Pilsners and the clearer type beers, lagers, standard
right.
lager.
For those really hot those, days where you're...
Yeah, if you're walking around mowing the yard and stuff like that, for me, it's let's get that sweat taken care of, and it's going to be... Probably something like a PBR. I'm pretty basic.
Just to kind of quench that thirst and just relax.
Exactly. And I want something a little bit more crushable in that case. Yeah. I don't want to drink one beer and next thing I know, I'm like on the couch sleeping.
Right. You don't want that big hop bomb and
right
at 8% alcohol.
Right. That doesn't work really well after you mowed the yard.
Yeah. And you're a little bit dehydrated anyway, right?
That's a sure recipe for a headache.
Those early morning or early evening hangovers before you even go to bed.
So I know Prost makes other brands other than just the Vienna Lager. What is your favorite of the Prost brand?
You know, I don't know that I've had a Prost beer that I didn't enjoy. Their Helles is fantastic. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Their Pilsner is great as well. So I think the Vienna Lager... The Helles, well, I guess I'm probably, this is the first time I've had the Vienna Lager,
right.
So I may be showing my hand a little bit here on what my review score might be. But the Helles and the Pilsner are probably my top three that they...
Yeah, and I would say the Pilsner is probably my top one of theirs, and the Helles is probably number two.
Yeah.
I haven't rated this one yet, so I don't know where it fits in the scheme of things, but I really am enjoying the little bit of dry... toastiness mm-hmm. to this beer. That's probably a good way to say that.
Yeah.
It's toasty rather than caramely.
Caramely.
Yeah. And yeah. I kind of like that. It's kind of going down really nice.
I like it. Let's do this. Let's take a break here. When we come back, we will tell you what we rate this beer, and we can find out whether or not it's BrewTalk approved or not.
Decisions, right?
It's tough. Stick around. Welcome back to Brew Talk here in the Aloe Fiber Studios in lovely downtown Greeley, Colorado. We just sampled the Prost Vienna Lager, and we're going to tell you what our rating was.
Mm-hmm.
Any final thoughts before we really get into that talk?
Over the break, I was saying, you know, this word toasty just rings in my head.
Mm-hmm.
The Jim Carrey movie with the Grinch, when he says, "And I'm all toasty inside." That's kind of how this beer kind of makes me feel.
Toasty inside.
There it is. So, and that's kind of how this beer seems to make me feel. Has a beautiful head. Awesome color, and it just seems to go down really smooth.
I think we're probably both very close on what we're going to rate this beer, just based on what we were saying. So let's do it. One, two, three.
There you go.
There we go. We got two kegs, which does make it BrewTalk approved.
I don't think there was any other choice in this particular one.
I really don't either. This is a wonderful beer. Again, I think it's a great style for springtime. So if you see it in the liquor stores, go out and try it. Prost has a tap room in Fort Collins. They have a tap room in Denver. And I think they're building a new one somewhere.
And any liquor store will
and
have
any Prost. Liquor store should have this, yeah.
Yeah.
We actually have it in cans at the Tavern at St. Michael's Square. So if you stop by on Saturdays, it's only $3.50 for a can of Prost Vienna Lager.
That doesn't sound too bad at all.
Not too bad.
Yeah, this is one of those beers that if you don't have it with you, you know, you're kind of stuck with other choices for the spring.
Right.
And you're missing this one link between that stout that you have been drinking and that Pilsner that you want to drink as we get into summer. So this style is perfect, and Prost does an awesome job.
Yes, they do. Other similar styles. Would you say a Maibock is similar?
A Maibock, a Bock.
A Bock.
Would work too, a Doppelbock.
Yeah.
Shiner makes a Bock that is, you've probably all heard of Shiner Bock. And that's a pretty similar style. It's not the same, but it's pretty similar.
And if I'm not mistaken, at one time, I think Prost used to make a Maibock. I don't know that they still do or not.
And we mentioned earlier.
Something to check out.
We mentioned earlier that Dos Equis Amber Lager.
Yes, yeah.
Well, they call it an Amber Lager. It's actually a Vienna Lager, same thing. That kind of style really, I mean, it's pervasive whether you like it flavored this way or flavored that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I would say the Bock, the Maibock, not quite a Doppelbock. That's maybe just a little too heavy.
Too heavy.
But we're in the same ballpark there.
We're in the same ballpark for sure. Yeah. So go check them out. Find a Vienna Lager. There's lots of breweries that do German styles. More and more now than there ever was.
I know.
Lagers used to be really tough to brew.
They used to be not only tough, but they still are. They're not really, I wouldn't use the word tough. They're just time-consuming,
yes. And they took up a lot of space.
A lot of space, and of course, if you're trying to keep that beer at that lagering temperature, they're expensive for the refrigeration that's required to do it.
Yeah.
So lagers overall cost a little bit more to make than an ale does. But the flavors are so much more crisp and clean that it really kind of makes it worth it, to be honest with you.
That's for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I can make a blonde ale in, you know, 10 days, and it's exciting. It's a blonde ale. But if I did the same kind of a beer made a Helles or something like that, it might take 6 weeks. The difference in flavor profile would be markedly different, even though the ingredients are fairly similar. So,
good. Yeah. What's what's coming up here at Rule 105?
Yeah. So this week we have our cribbage tournament on Wednesday. Anybody wants to enter, doesn't cost anything. Come on down, play some cribbage with us. Winner of the nightly event gets a gift card. Thursday is our open mic night. If you have a guitar or Jew's harp or whatever you're playing, and come on down and entertain us, we'd love to listen to you. And then Friday we have live music from Samantha Aaron, and she really, really rocks the stage. So definitely very worth coming down to listen to.
Any new exciting releases coming up?
By tax day, we will have just what we're talking about here, a Pilsner released, and it's about a week and a half to 2 weeks away from completely done. We've got tons of other good things coming out, including our Red Fox Irish style ale. Should be back up and running in about 10 days. So
very good.
So what's going on at the tavern?
You know, we're just gearing up for April, springtime, getting that patio ready for all the patio events and beer drinking. We've got our beer dinner coming up at the end of the month with Denver Brewing Company.
Nice.
Or Denver Beer Company, excuse me. So that's, you know, that's a great bunch of beers. And they also might bring some stuff from Cerveceria.
Oh,
who is
nice.
a sister brewery right next to Denver Beer Company. So we might have a little mix and match there.
Some of my previous students ended up finding positions at Denver Beer Company.
That's great.
So,
and speaking of previous students, not too long ago, we were just down in Buena Vista and went to Eddie Line. Had a good time out there. So.
Yeah, so I did have a couple students that were working there at Eddie Line for a while, and one moved back to the East Coast not too long ago, and the other one that actually moved down to Denver Beer Company.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, so kind of interesting. But still really great friends with everybody up there at Eddie Line. They know what they're doing.
They really do.
And they're doing a really good job of it.
Yeah.
So what better place to make beer, though?
Oh, no kidding.
Right?
What
in the mountains.
Beautiful place.
Beautiful. Yeah.
Really great time.
Good beer, too.
Good beer. Well, hey, everybody, thanks for tuning in tonight. We do this once a week, and hopefully you tune in every Tuesday.
Really enjoy it, too.
We have a good time. There's nothing better than drinking beer and with some good friends and talking about it. Get out there, try some Prost Vienna Lager, enjoy it, see what's going on. There's lots of stuff going on in breweries all around for spring, so get out there and find out what's going on. I'm Chad, he's Doc, Scott's on assignment, but we all wish you a great evening, and go out and drink some beer. Cheers.